Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy 2015 to you. You're into the groove now. You have no choice. You can't look back. What you're going to do, undoubtedly, sometime over the next 2 or 3 months, thinking about the new year, your resolutions, is you're going to get your physical exam from your medical doctor. That's the one your insurance pays for. That's the one you depend on to take care of your health. And of course, since this is Straight Talk on Health, we're going to give you an insight into that, because it's not the case. Those blood tests you get each year, and again, those of you who have listened to the show in the past, you know, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, that's with two T's, .cc. If you're new to the show, same thing. Get to that website when you can. Why? I'll show you the pictures, so you can look at the visual image, and you can put that into your memory. A lot easier to do that. So you're going to go to your physical, you're going to go to your medical doctor, you're going to get your blood work, and they're going to leave out a lot of tests because the way the money works today, what we try to do is give you the non-specific test, and if that alerts us, then maybe, of course, a lot of you are going to have to plead with your doctors, plead with your managed care system, this is increasingly the case, to get the specialty test. But the specialty tests I'm going to get to today, most of them your doctors don't even know about. That's kind of ridiculous, but that's always the way it is. There's always the cutting edge, and there's always what hits the mainstream, and the gap between the two. Well, in all fairness to your medical doctors, a lot of times they don't have to study that. So, as I've seen consistently now for the last year, when I ask my clients to go to their managed care facility and ask them to get, number one, the oxidized cholesterol test, almost every time I hear, he didn't know what that was. What is that? I'm not going to order something if I don't even know what it is or where to get it. And I'm going to give you a bunch of these today, as much as 60 minutes permits. Again, this is the third show of lab tests. This is the specialty lab test. And in the past, we went into the more standard ones so you could understand them and interpret them. But some of these today you've not ever even heard of, neither has your medical doctor. And it's your job to bring it to him or her. And I think if they're reasonable and they'll take the time to do the work, they'll go to the specialty lab and order them. And even if you have to pay out of pocket, these tests are worth it. Why? Well, I'm going to start with oxidized cholesterol because 1 out of 3 Americans, pushing on 1 out of 2 Americans, is going to have some sort of a cardiovascular event in the end. In the end, something's going to happen to the heart. You may get a stroke. There may be other type of autoimmune damage to the blood vessels. And even if there's not, you're going to suffer from decreased perfusion, because the blood's too thick. All of this is under the cardiovascular dome. And one test you want to get familiar with is oxidized cholesterol. Now, if you're on the website, which I hope you are, I want you to go to, just so you understand, when you hear these are so cutting edge, these are so fringe, these are so nonsensical, just understand there are a host of the very medical doctors that you're talking to who are on board with these tests, who research these tests, who publish on these tests. And in past shows, I've given you this data already. We're going to sum it up a little differently today. But take a look at picture number 6. Now, here's a guy, Ladd McNamara. Of course, if you Google him up, you're always going to get some idiot that has an axe to grind with this guy, just as you will with Dwight Lundell. And understand, and a lot of people do this and don't understand, anytime someone runs ahead of the curve, you're going to have the quack squad blow their whistle. In other words, the clones, the nitwits, the people who think their job is to manage creative thought and knock down every creative trend or cutting-edge perception in medicine. Where did you see this 40, 50 years ago? Cigarettes. If you do the research, and I'm not going to do a show on this, but I've done enough myself to know that when we were and others were touting that cigarettes were dangerous for your health, the quack squad was there all the way back in the 50s saying, hey, you're telling people cigarettes are dangerous for your health? You're a quack, because there's no data to support that. And this will follow with every single medical cutting-edge opinion on the line. And today, with this thing about cholesterol being the concern about it being somewhat mythical, that it needs to be qualified, that what we're getting with the basic LDL, HDL tests is ridiculous and absurd, that half the people that get heart attacks each year have normal cholesterol levels and no one's taking a look at that. All of this, when it's under the tutelage of, say, a guy like Led McNamara, the quack squad comes out, and you go to your Google search, and you'll see three or four articles on what an idiot this guy is. And it's the same thing with Dwight Lundell. It's the same thing with me. It's the same thing with anybody that speaks out. So you have to understand that context. But here's Led McNamara, just as, if you turn to the next picture, picture number 7, Dwight Lundell. Dwight Lundell was the guy that did all the angioplasties. Dwight Lundell was all the guy that did all the bypass surgeries and went out and published about all here. You're about to discover what causes heart disease, and it's not cholesterol. Now, the medical profession in general is evolving in understanding of this, but it's very slow. I, mind you, is a great little YouTube segment out. It's about an hour on by a guy named Ed Griffith on amygdala, vitamin B17. At any rate, in this little YouTube clip, he mentions that ascorbic acid, meaning vitamin C, was known to cure scurvy in the early 1800s. And it took about 100 years or so for the medical model to pick up and accept it. If you study medicine, the history of medicine, the social history, almost invariably you will find from the time someone starts touting that something works, it's 100 to 200 to 300 to 500 years before it becomes mainstream. I mean, this is regrettable, but this is the reality of it. And you're going to see this with this cholesterol nonsense. Why do I repeat myself? Pardon me if you listen to the show regularly and you're hearing this again. Because I never stop hearing about it. It never stops. People are still coming in concerned about their cholesterol levels and what to do about it, because someone ran an LDL and it's 20% higher than the norm that was 20% higher 20 years ago. So we want to put an end to this absurdity. Here's the test. It's called oxidized cholesterol. Now go to picture number 5, CMB Laboratory in Cyprus. I'll give you another one, LabCorp. LabCorp. C-O-R-P, as in corporation. They will run oxidized cholesterol. What is oxidized cholesterol versus regular cholesterol? What is oxidized cholesterol versus regular cholesterol? Turn to picture number 3. I think this is a great example of it. Picture number 3, LDL. Do you see that? Low-density lipoproteins. That's what you call that standard cholesterol you get measured in that superficial, almost nonsensical test you get once a year. And that LDL in the center of that picture, that LDL is about to have somebody, I mean metaphorically, somebody come up to it with a pitchfork and stab it 100 times in the head. That LDL molecule is going to be attacked by free radicals to the extent where it's going to have a million holes in it. We can call this glycation. We can call it glycooxidation. We can call it free radical damage. We can call it oxidative stress, since a lot of these molecules that attack the normal LDL, the normal cholesterol, the bad cholesterol. The molecules that attack it using oxygen as its spearhead. So we say they are free radical oxygen reactive species. You got it. Oxygen. Oxygen we breathe. Oxygen in our cells. Oxygen can get transformed into something that creates damage in the body. Well, not just oxygen. Lots of things can get transformed to the kind of little termites running around molecularly in the body that like to chip the paint off the walls. And this type of in this case, oxygen-driven process comes up to your LDL and starts tearing it apart, starts poking holes in it. Oxidation, oxidative stress, glycation, so on and so forth. Once that happens, now look right above that LDL molecule, it ultimately creates an inflammatory reaction, turning the LDL into what we call a foam cell. It's part of an LDL foam cell complex. And that big snot ball will stick to the inside of the endothelial layer of the artery. And this is, in part, what drives plaque formation. Now, the point is, if this process isn't occurring, if your LDL is not oxidizing at a very rapid rate, your cholesterol could be 400 and your arteries will be clear. Case in point, the history of the Eskimo. Now, right there, we ought to just settle this. Really, we should put this to rest. The Eskimo. We have tribes on the African continent, Maasai, who consume unbelievably high levels of LDL. Their cholesterol should be 2,000. And it's normal. And Scandinavian scientists did much work dissecting, upon death, the bodies of Eskimos up there in northern Norway, Finland, Sweden, and found that these guys in their 80s, 90s, 100s had the arteries of two-year-old kids. This is all in the literature for you to look at. It's all in the literature for your medical doctors to look at. And this is McNamara's point, and this is Lundell's point, and this is Sinatra's point, and this is my point. So what's going on then? When Kaiser sees your LDL up at 280 and says, go on a statin drug. Well, I'll leave that to you to figure out. But your point is, hey, doc, before we do this, let's run an oxidized cholesterol test. And your medical doctor can do this. And if they can't do this, refer them to the site. If they can't do this, refer them to CMB Labs. Refer them to the literature. Don't sit there shaking in your boots because your MD gives you that stern look and says, there's no science attached to any of this oxidative cholesterol testing. Yes, there is. There's tons of it. It's just they haven't read it. Now, what are they doing to their credit? Okay, this is what they're doing. The doctors are doing as far as a little bit more advanced cholesterol testing. Picture number one. Go to picture number one. Picture number one, lipoprotein subclasses, HDL, LDL, IDL, VLDL. What they're basically doing now is stating that you can't call all cholesterol the same. And what we've got now is this notion that if your cholesterol, two people have an ounce of cholesterol in the blood, and one person has that 1 ounce in one huge blob, and the other person has that 1 ounce in 50 billion microblobs. So two people have the same LDL reading. They both have 1 ounce of cholesterol in their blood. And one person has in that 1 ounce of cholesterol one big blob of cholesterol, and the other person has that in that 1 ounce 50 billion little blobs. It's the 50 billion little ones that are dangerous. The 50 billion little runs are the dangerous ones. Now, how are we trying to sort of make this into a diagram, go to picture number two. Take a look at picture number two. This is where the picture's worth 1,000 words, because you may not have understood what I just said. But you'll get it from the picture. If you're new to the show and on and in the car listening, when you get home, straighttalk.cc, not .com, get to the website. Look at the show again. Look at the pictures again. There, picture number two. Two people with the same amount of LDL. They both have 130 milligrams per deciliter of LDL cholesterol in their blood. One person has it in big balls, and the other person has it in many more little balls. The person with the little balls has the much higher risk. Great. So some of you have had a better level of cardiology or internal medicine giving you a more specific LDL test into IDL, VDL, VLDL, not just the HDL, LDL. Okay? That's what they're going for. If your VLDL, okay, is high, it means that you're the person on the left. Okay? It means your cholesterol is less dangerous. And this is more or less how this is understood. If we can get these subsets, we can determine then further what your risk is, if you even go that far. Let me tell you right now that when you get most of these panels done, if your LDL is high, you don't get a subset test. You don't get your VLDL. You don't get your IDL. What you get is a statin drug. This is nonsense. This should not be happening. You should at least get, within the parameter of the medical tests that currently cardiology is unanimous about, a VLDL. So you can see just if your blob of cholesterol is a billion little blobs or one big one, and you can get a further insight. But what's my point? Skip this. Well, I shouldn't say skip it. It is secondary or tertiary in consideration to your oxidized cholesterol test. It's oxidized cholesterol that really will tell you what's going on. And that's, as I just explained, picture number three. Look at picture number five. There, CMB Laboratory. I use this lab. Others use this lab. It's one of a number of labs that will give you an oxidized cholesterol test. So, what do you do with that? Many of you are going to be told you have ILDL. Tell your doctor, I want you to run through LabCorp or CMB an oxidized cholesterol test. If they won't, go elsewhere and get it done and put this to rest. Don't let it linger. Remember, we have a curious, unarguable reality. Half the people that get heart attacks each year, bypasses, have normal cholesterol levels. You see? If you just examine that, you can't depend on the simple LDL. Okay, let's keep moving then. Let's take a look at anemia. I want to do a quick one on anemia. First of all, if your hemoglobin, HGB, is borderline low, that's anemia. But the test that they don't measure, the test that they don't take, the test that they should take is a ferritin, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, ferritin, serum ferritin. This test is usually not run. It should be part of every anemia panel. And the first reason it's not run, the first reason ferritin, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, the first reason that ferritin is not run is very, very simply because the low normal hemoglobin is still considered normal. So if your hemoglobin range is supposed to be between 12 and 16, and you're at 12.2, that's normal. Now suppose you're a 40-year-old woman, 50-year-old woman bleeding out in menopause, and on a good day, your hemoglobin's 12.2. What do you think it is 2 weeks later when you've been bleeding for 2 weeks? It's 10. And that's my point. Suppose you're a 30-year-old woman, and in your active cycle, you just bleed a lot. Suppose you're a vegetarian, and you bleed a lot. What are you going to find at that time of the month when you're bleeding a lot? What you're going to find is you are terribly anemic. Suppose the test is done at the time of the month when you're less anemic. And that's the point. So if you come in low normal, they miss this. I'm telling you, this can easily account for a lifetime of anemia, a lifetime of pain. And what does anemia mean? This is the thing you got to really keep in mind. Anemia means your cell, which thrives on oxygen, which has many non-oxygen pathways, if you press it. If you back your cell up against a wall, it will shift to a non-oxygen metabolism. What we'll call an anaerobic, without oxygen metabolism, not complicated stuff. But under the stress of a low oxygen environment, you are setting yourself up for a problem. Now, why? Why is this not stressed? Why? And this is what you, in 2015, have to come to understand. The managed health care that you are paying for does not organize itself around chronic care. It manages itself around acute care. That is what you're paying for. Protection against acute care. We do not have a healthcare system that's interested in management of chronic disease. Not really. Not cure of chronic disease. Not even management. We have a healthcare system that focuses on the tests show a gross anomaly. You're going to be hurt shortly, and we're going to do something about it. For that, they're great. For the rest of it, they stink. They always did, and they always will, and they will more so now. Because the way managed health care is most likely going to defunct on you is in the form of you don't get the test fast enough because of the way the system's going to work. And you have to understand that definitely we are going to follow that trend. And this means you have to be much more educated. So, if your hemoglobin's at 12.1, and low normal's 12, you don't know if really you're supposed to function up at 14 unless, and I said this one of the past shows, you're measuring it against your other tests. This is why you have to keep your tests. You have to file your tests. You have to compare your tests. We determine reality based on trends. Reality is based on trends, not on one quick shot test. Very important to understand this. So ferritin is your reserve iron. When the body has extra iron, it sends it to the liver, and the liver stores it. And then when you need it, the liver releases it, goes into the blood, and it goes to the hemoglobin molecule. Just take a second to take a look at the hemoglobin molecule. You know, everyone studies this in basic chemistry because it's such a fascinating entity. So just take a look at picture number 19. Well, actually, let's go to picture number 18 first. Picture number 18, because we give you the big picture. I like to give you the big picture, and then we work right on down into the microscopic picture. Here's the big picture. Red blood cell. You see it there on the left. And in the red blood cell is the hemoglobin molecule. And that hemoglobin molecule is going to have a orange, green, purple, and sort of magneta arms. It's going to have four arms in what we call this pyrrole chain. But on each arm, on each orange, green, purple, magneta, is this little disc, right? You can see this little disc where it says iron, that little disc that's blue with a red cherry in the center. That little blue disc, there's four of them there. You're looking at them. In the center of this pyrrole ring, on this red blood cell, that little disc with the iron in the center is where the molecule attaches to oxygen. And it does in a fascinating way. So I want you to take a moment to understand the reality of dynamic chemistry. That hemoglobin molecule is like a blob inside a red blood cell. And that blob is constantly changing shape based on different oxygen carbon dioxide concentrations. And that blob, as it approaches the lung, that blob, that hemoglobin molecule, opens its blob and pushes out that little blue ring with the red cherry in the center, so that the iron, if it's there, can capture the oxygen. And then that blob swallows it up and drops it off in the cell of your choice. In other words, then from the lung, it goes far away into the organ and drops it off into the organ so the cell can grab it and use it in oxidative phosphorylation, and you can make your ATP and life can go on happily. But that blob with that iron in the center is constantly changing shape. When it wants to offer up the oxygen, the iron, it offers it up. And when it wants to pull it away, it pulls it away. So in the lung, it's reaching its iron molecule out towards the oxygen that the lung is picking up to catch it and then deliver it. That is, if the oxygen is there, right? You've got to have oxygen in the atmosphere. And when there's less of it, there's trouble. When the air is polluted, something may compete with the oxygen. Your lungs have a job to do that requires them to be able to pick up the oxygen. If the lung is fibrotic in any way, shape, or form, if the lung is problematic in and of itself, it's not going to capture that oxygen. So the lung's got to be there. The oxygen's got to be in the air. The iron's got to be in the center of that disc. There's a whole bunch of prerequisites. Now, vegans, vegetarians, people with low hydrochloric acid, people who eat their meat so well done that they can't digest it, people with low protease that can't digest the meat, so on and so forth. You've got to make sure that that iron's coming in, and if that iron is bound in fiber and you think you're going to get it out of a cherry or your spinach or so on and so forth, or your apricot or your prune or your cherry, and you're not digesting it and breaking the iron off the cellulose, then you're not going to get it anyway. For whatever reason, if you don't get the iron into your blood, then this whole system collapses in one big heap. Now, that being said, suppose everything works and you just run out of iron because you don't get enough. Well, your liver understands this, and inside the liver, you store extra iron, right? On the Discover Show, when the cougar takes down the gazelle or the deer, it rips it open, and the first thing it goes for is the liver. Why? The liver stores things. Eat your liver. It's rich in, well, grandma knew, it's rich in something we need. On the farm, eat the organ. It's rich in something we need. Eat the kidney. Eat the pancreas. Eat the liver. You see, eat the marrow of the bone. On the farm, we use these things because these entities back then, when we were cleaner, was rich in nutrient. So your liver in your body is storing your iron. This is why you have to measure ferritin, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N. If you're low normal on the hemoglobin and your ferritin is low, you're sick. You are going to get sick. To function for decades anoxic, low tissue oxygen is to grow every imaginable disease you're coded for. I defy anyone in science to say that the statement I just made lacks reality, functional reality, and scientific backing. I defy them, anyone, to say this. But what we do is we apply our common sense to a scientific model that limits our common sense. You have to understand that. When your medical doctor crosses his arms in his white coat when you get your physical and says your hemoglobin, Mrs. Smith, is 12.2, you're fine. Who needs to measure ferritin? Your hemoglobin's normal. You've got lots of reserve iron, I'm sure. This is ignorant. And when they don't want to run more testing, you are getting ripped off. And when they say there's nothing to support statements like the ones I'm making today, they are incorrect. And the real translation here is the scientific model then turns around and says, okay, now run studies to show that people with low ferritin and borderline anemia suffer from disease, any disease, at higher numbers. You cannot find the funding for that test. No one will fund that. And even if it was funded, few people care to do it. And that's the reality of medicine. And very often the reality of these tests confines your intuitive, intelligent level of common sense. And this is why we have this gap. It's not that your medical doctors are bad people. It has nothing to do with that. It's that they're trained a certain way, and they're not trained, unfortunately, to think outside the box. You need to be, because your life literally depends on it. All right, so that's ferritin. A little bit about ferritin. Here's something else that ought to get measured, and you never see this done. You never see this done. This needs to be done. Let's look at a red blood cell, okay? To do that, I want you to go to picture number 16. A red blood cell is simple. It's a biconcave disc. Most of your blood, we say blood. Blood is cells and water. The water's called plasma. The cells are called the cells. There's platelet cells. There's immune system cells. Most of what we call the cells of the blood are red blood cells, okay? They're biconcave, meaning they're caved in on both spheres of it, on both surfaces. It's pushed in. So it's a hockey puck. It's a thick piece of Wonder Bread pushed in on both sides to make it dip or concave. So red blood cell is a biconcave disc. And you're looking at the way it looks. Now, when, for a variety of reasons that we're not going to get into today, you have anemia, iron deficiency anemia, B12 deficiency anemia, the red blood cell looks different. It looks like picture number 15. Go to picture number 15, take a peek. The red blood cell becomes what we call a target cell. Your doctors should be measuring the amount of target cells in your blood. Yes, they should. They don't. I'll bet most of them don't know what a target cell is. But it should be measured. It's in hematology. It's in the textbooks. Your hematologists, your blood doctor specialists know the too many target cells suggest problems that you will not see measured in your standard CBC or chem panel. A few shows back, I did the CBC and the chem panel. You're going to get hemoglobin and RBC count. That's it. Maybe you'll get a CBC differential, which will divide up some of the immune system cells from the neutrophils to the basophils to the eosinophils, so on and so forth. But you're not going to get your target cells measured. But hematology is very aware of this. A target cell has a bullseye appearance, and a target cell can mean megaloblastic anemia, B12 deficiency anemia, as well as iron deficiency anemia. It's another test. It should be done. It can tell them things. It's easy to run an assay as long as they're going to do a CBC. It ought to be done, period. Now, when you see that target cell, well, what do you do about it? Well, you've got to get somebody to figure out why you've got too many target cells. Now, we just went into the whole iron thing. Iron deficiency anemia can cause this. But keep in mind that there's other reasons you're going to have target cells. And another reason is B12 deficiency. So let's get to B12 deficiency. B12, you know the vitamin. B12, you know you need. B12, you know, without, things don't work. There's too many things B12 is involved with. We like to say when your hands and feet are burning and numb, when we like to say there's too much DNA damage occurring, when we like to say that there's all sorts of neurological problems, we point to B12, but B12 is running so many pathways in the body, it's ridiculous to say what you get without B12. A much better way to approach this is to make sure your B12 levels are good. And whose aren't? Older people. Why? Well, B12, to absorb B12, you need something that the stomach makes called intrinsic factor. An intrinsic factor tends not to be made as much of, which is why a lot of your elderly after 60 ought to be doing sublingual B12. Now, you're going to your doctors each year to get tested. You're over the age of 60 years old. There's a test for B12 you have to do, okay? There's a test for B12 that must be done. And that test is methylmalonic acid. Methylmalonic acid. Methylmalonic acid is going, well, let's put it this way. Methylmalonic acid is measured in the urine. And what it indicates when it starts to get high is that the B12 is deficient and therefore it's not metabolized. Methylmalonic acid goes up when the amount of available B12 goes down. That's the way you want to remember that. Methylmalonic acid goes up when the amount of B12 goes down. There's another thing that goes up when the amount of B12 goes down, homocysteine, H-O-M-O-C-Y-S-T-E-I-N, homocysteine. Now, both methylmalonic acid and homocysteine can go up when other things are wrong other than B12 deficiency, but not likely over the age of 60 if methylmalonic acid, which is a simple urine test. You can do it yourself online. You can do all these tests online. By the way, testing has changed. If you don't know this, testing has changed. Go to directtests.com. Direct testing, directtests.com. I've done this on other shows and mentioned it. You can go straight to the lab now and order your own tests. And much ado has been created over the prospect that over the next decade, I mean, off a pinprick, you're going to do what once was 4 days in a lab. There are a lot of doctors now running labs, your hematologists especially, they're eating this up. It's a competitive edge where you walk in and you have your blood drawn and 20 minutes later, all your findings come out. They have the lab right there, but it's going to get better than that. You don't have to be enslaved. This is still America. So my doctor didn't order the test. You can go straight to different labs, and they'll do the test. You can order them online. The legal system, the American Constitution, is still allowing this to occur. It's your right to find out about your body. When we start, when they start, when it starts becoming otherwise, well, that's a whole other show, isn't it? But right now, if you want to know something about your body, something in your blood, and somebody in the system doesn't want to give it to you, you can get it anyway. Don't sit there and go, my doctor didn't want to order it. My doctor didn't understand me. Do not care about that. Educate your doctor respectfully and politely, and if you can't get through, get another doctor. And if you can't get through, do it yourself. So, methyl malonic acid, M-E-T-H-Y-L-M-A-L-O-N-I-C, methylmalonic acid, and homocysteine. They go up when your available B12 goes down. Well, you don't have to think about that because you're simply going to stuff a lot of this B12 down your gut. Here's the problem. B12 does not absorb through your gut. And that's because of what I said, intrinsic factor. So you can get the best B12 that money can buy. You can get a methylated B12, but that doesn't mean it's going to absorb. The B12 you're looking for is sublingual. That's where the smart money. This is why B12 injections, we have today still failed to match the B12 injection. I think we've done a good job competing with it. I think that Premier Research Labs B12, a methylated B12, is astounding stuff. But we're still not quite matching the good old B12 injection. Why? Because there's nothing more conversion, is nothing more initially effective than taking somebody that's deficient and putting it straight into their blood. Now, long term, that's a different story. Long term, you want to prime your digestive system, prime it. You want to make sure that you start achieving a level of health such that your intestinal wall, your gut, your stomach lining can begin to, well, improve its physiology so your absorptive processes get better. But when you're 70 years old and you're sick and you don't have energy and your feet are burning at night, if you're going to your doctor for a physical and they're not running urine methylmalonic acid, that's a big mistake because it's a much more sensitive test. They may run it in the blood. They may run B12 in the blood. The purpose of running methylmalonic acid, it's a much more sensitive test. And in that gap between something that's acute and super obvious and something that's slight and subtle, in that gap between the two is where the mystery of your symptomology lives. In the gap between the gross and the subtle is the mystery of where your symptomology lives. And once it becomes a mystery, it goes on the shelf in the library of medical mysteries. And then people stop thinking and they start panicking. And this is why for something as simple as a sublingual B12, as simple as a methylmalonic urine test, you go on in the land of hocus pocus about your blood and about your symptoms. All right, let's keep moving. That's all I wanted to say on B12 right now. Let's look at the HCG, the urine chorionic gonadotropin hormone, HCB. This was sold under what we call the Navar test. All right, and I want you to go to picture number. Oh, did I put the Navar test on here? Don't tell me I did not put the Navarro test on here. Oxidata. Okay, we didn't have time to get the Navar test on here. There was a medical doctor out of the Philippines named Navar. Actually, it was Navarro. Navarro. And he was interested in cancer. And as Donald Kelly understood, and I've done shows on this, one thing cancer does, regardless of where it is and what it is, who it is it produces an increase in the level of the same hormone that builds the placenta, the human chorionic gonadotropin hormone, shorted as HCG. And the Navarro test was a simple urine test, the kit for which you could get in your home, the instructions to which were simple enough, very specific, but simple enough for you to follow on your own. And you could send this to a lab in the Philippines. Now, of course, America kind of thinks if it goes out of America, it's hocus pocus. It's got to be someone in a tribal costume dancing half naked in the jungle that doesn't know anything. I think we need to wake up on this one. All due respect to America, and I am an American and a constitutionalist, hardcore. But nonetheless, don't think because it's not American-made, it's nonsense. Now, this test, the Navarro test, is another really good marker. It should be run. It should be run every single time, all along with other little marker tests for cancer, for breast cancer, for ovarian cancer. Why are we running these tests after we get breast cancer and ovarian cancer? We ought to be running these tests before. You, after the age of 60, if you have any concern, should be getting these tests, and you should be factoring them in to your yearly physical so you have baselines on this. This is smart money. This is what you want to take to your medical doctors, and you don't want to hear, well, I've never heard of this, and therefore I'm not doing it, and therefore I'm not going to run it, and therefore anybody that runs it that isn't within my corporation isn't a scientist. This is a crock. It's a crock in plain English. The HCG urine test is a valid test. Again, the point, tests are not black and white. What does that mean? It means if you think testing is simply, I got the test, it says this, and therefore I got that. Well, you have to think again. a test is only as good as the other tests you did the year before. A test is only as good as those tests in conjunction with other tests. A test is only as good as the test you did the year or 2 years before in conjunction with other tests that test around the same issue in conjunction with clinical symptomology and physical signs. The physical and clinical signs. The test should correlate with physical and clinical diagnostic work. Are you following that? You want it cookie cutter. You want it black and white. The test said. Sometimes tests do just say. Sometimes on the basis of one test, we can say, based on this finding, you got this. It's pathognomonic, we say. Pathognomonic means you got this and you definitely got that. There's no two ways about it. When your hemoglobin is 5, well, I can't even say that. I was going to say when your hemoglobin is 5, you're anemic. Do you know that that's sometimes not true? It's very hard to pin a diagnosis on the back of one test. Unless you've done that test repeatedly and you can compare it. So this is the thing about testing in general. If you're hearing from this show, oh, cancer, I'm concerned in my family. I got the BRCA positive. I'm concerned. I'm going to go get the HCG test. Oh, my HCG test is normal. It's under 50. It's normal. I can just relax behind that. You're not understanding the point of the show, so please understand the point of the show. That's the reality, which is that these tests have to be in conjunction. Yeah, I'm repeating myself because you will forget. With past tests, and you have to correlate it to the whole picture. You have to think. The reason that you listen to this show, the reason that you should listen to this show, is because I'm asking you to think. I'm trying to teach you to think. If you can't think, you will be in trouble. To be able to think is to be able to navigate correctly, safely, to more fertile pastures. To be able to just accumulate data because you listen to a lot of radio shows is going to get you nowhere. I guarantee you that. I have watched people do this for 2 decades because they don't want to think. You know, the teacher that asks you to memorize and the teacher that asks you to think. I'm the one that asks you to think. Thinking is fun. It's good. If this is too complicated, you might hate to think. Thinking should be fun. This, I hope, is fun. Healing is fun. Everything about the divinity in the body is fun. This is prayer. This is prayer on Saturday, not Sunday. Prayer is celebrating through exercise the divinity in you. That's the way I look at it. Do you look at it that way? 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you are lost in problems, health-wise, with concerns, and don't know which way to turn, if you've been everywhere else, if you're finding yourself absolutely depressed about something that's catching up on you, make the appointment here and learn to think. Let's keep going. And we've got more than enough time to keep going. PCR testing. It's called PCR testing. Let's take a look at what we mean by PCR testing. Let's look at picture number 20. Is HIV DNA PCR test the best option? Now we're talking about HIV, not something too many are interested in. In 1982 to 1984, you were interested in whether you were HIV positive. This swept the world. Someday I'm going to do a show on this. You know, it's not relevant to most of my audience, but boy, the piece of medical history you can draw on the basis of how we've dealt with HIV, AIDS, drugs like AZT, if you can understand it as a metaphor for how the medical model works and shouldn't work, that would be a show. I think I'm going to do it. I think I just convinced myself to launch. I have newspaper clips from the 80s on HIV and AIDS. It was fascinating to follow. This is a PCR test. In the 80s, we hadn't invented PCR. What do we mean by PCR? You're looking for the genetic sequence of the virus that you might have. So if you have Epstein-Barr virus, if you have the Lyme bacteria, if you've got amoeba, the parasite, if you've got the retrovirus, HIV, we can look for its genetic fragment in your body. So even if we can't find the virus, we can find its genetic excrement, so to speak. If we take you and put you in a meat grinder and grind you up and break you apart and liquefy you and throw you off into the clear blue air, clear blue sky, excuse me. If we just liquidate you, for the most part, you're not there anymore, but we just might be able to find your genetic sequence, the string of nucleotides specific to you. That's what PCR testing is. I got into this, I think, my last show, Kerry Mulis, in the 90s. You can run this. So if you've got an infectious disease concern, one test, if somebody tells you you have Lyme and they want to put that on the back of an antibody test, your IgMs and your IgGs, don't stop there. If somebody says Epstein-Barr, you know who's famous for this? Your holistic practitioners. Your holistic practitioners love to run antibody panels for parasites. This is one of your standard ways to tell you you have a parasite. We run an IgG, which only indicates past infection, not just current. You can easily have an antibody response when you have no trace of it in your body. Rather, I should say, when you have no threat to your body, when you don't have to think about it, when it would be nonsense to even worry about it. Just because you have digestive symptoms, somebody pulls up a high antibody titer, IgG, and tells you, you got it, and now let's get to the remedy for it. Go to the PCR. Again, a PCR is not a panacea. But this is a very, very active area of research. Finding, I mean, think about it. Use your common sense. Do you want to find the whole bacteria? Do you want to find a piece of it? Or do you want a test specific enough to find its genetic sequence? Just a nucleotide sequence, unlike any other part of you. And that's what PCR is, and it should be run. And you run it for Ebola, you run it for AIDS, you run it for hepatitis, you run it for Lyme, you run it for Epstein-Barr, you run it for Kuru, you run it for Jacob Creutzfeldt. You can run PCR on everything. This is a big area in genetics. And as I said, it's another marker. It's a more specific marker. Look at picture 22. Go to picture 22. Nucleic acid-based diagnosis, that's PCR. Expensive. Yeah, it is expensive. PCR can fail. Everything can fail. Contaminations and false positives. If it's done well, you won't have that. If it's done and it's positive, you have to test it a second time. Before I think I had anything, I tested a second time. I would never take the advice of a single test. Lab technicians make mistakes all the time. Good doctors will always run the test a second time. Always. Always. So on that basis, PCR can fail. Of course it can. Anything can fail. DNA probes do not distinguish between dead and living parasites. If your PCR for a parasite is way up, okay, and that parasite represents something that's dead, what's it doing there if the PCR is way up? So make no mistake about it. We have a test beyond the antibody test. We have a test that the direction of diagnostic testing is moving in the direction of. It's called PCR diagnosis. Don't measure your Hep C titer on the basis of antibody tests. Measure it on the back of PCR. Okay, PCR. Expensive but worthwhile. Here's one that's slipping through. Here's one upon which I may have to conclude today's show. The glucose tolerance test. I'm repeating this, I know, but I'm repeating it for a reason. Nobody's running the test. You're going to get your tests this year. They're going to look at your fasting blood glucose. This is a sin. It is a cardinal sin. At least run HGB-A1C, your glycosylated hemoglobin. That tells us how many times your glucose is hitting your red blood cell. Direct communion between the blood sugar and the red blood cell in the blood. It's glycosylation measured by HGB-A1C. Much better test. You want to know something? They're not going to run it. You're not going to see it. Too often you don't see it. And even if it's normal, I would not trust that test. The test, what should be the standard test, is the glucose tolerance test. Go to picture number 27. The oral glucose tolerance test. You swallow a ton of sugar. Look at how high your blood glucose goes. And then every hour, measure it until it goes back to 80. If it doesn't drop down low fast, like within the first hour, tops the first 2 hours, if it's 4 hours later and your blood glucose is still 140, 150, you're diabetic. Your fasting blood glucose will be normal. Your HGB-A1C might be probably borderline high, but it will still be within the normal parameter, and you are destroying your body. You are oxidizing your LDL. You are degenerating your brain. You are hurting yourself in every way. You are slowing down your fat-burning capacity. There is no end to what happens to the human body when it's been running on high insulin and high blood sugar for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and yet what? Give any healthy person 8 hours of sleep, test them at 10 o'clock in the morning fasting, and their blood sugar is normal. Your blood sugar is normal. You have to look under the rug. You have to get educated. You have to be super, super on top of it. You have to be charming and respectful to your medical doctor. Make them work for you. 714-850-1007. Make me work for you. If you're lost, confused, have health concerns, give that number a call. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.